양킨 지위당 이자와 후랑와 사기스와양 라타낭 파니탕 난노 사망아티 타타가티나 이잠 피부데 라타낭 파니탕 에티나 사치나 수아티 호투
What is your suffering? How do you deal with this complex world? We are very blessed. And then you hear about people living in very dire conditions in the winter too. Every day, year after year. Observing how people in those situations cope and how they bring hopefulness to their suffering. And observing people who live, who have wealth and privilege, and the human realm is like this. That's just what the Buddha said 2.5 millennia ago. There are those that are blessed with physical comforts. And maybe they're not the first ones to wake up to what is precious in this life. Because easily you get distracted by the power of wealth, privilege, and entitlement. And then there's greed. You always want more. It's never enough. Where are we going with all this? So in our civilization, I don't know how civil it is, but that's what it's called. We cultivate unwholesome mind states. We do, because we're not aware of what we're doing. And it doesn't have a good result. It comes from ignorance. We're not aware, so we don't realize. And we easily get angry. And there's the blame. Blame external conditions. Blame somebody else, not my fault. One of the most precious things about our life here is that we try to find contentment with things as they are. We live together. It's not like we all have an apartment. One is over there and one is there. We have space where we can spend time alone. But we also have space that we share. And we share the communal space, the food, all the things that are offered to us. But we share the practice. It seems so valuable to live together and to bump into each other and see what that feels like. And then observe what the mind cultivates and use the practice to bring that up a notch, to smooth out the pointy bits, to celebrate the goodness. To be available in situations like this where we don't know who's going to show up. And we put out the chairs and get the hall ready. We take care of the shrines. It's because what we want to cultivate, we want to share that so that it is available. Because without the Buddha's teaching, I don't think I could live in this world with much sanity. But the Buddha teaches us how to deal with sorrow, sadness, fear, how to deal with anger, frustration, self-degradation, how to investigate, whenever we're suffering, to investigate what is the origin of this, where does this come from? We can't blame anybody. Whatever is going on in here, it's almost like a little society. And whatever we create in this little realm, we have to take responsibility for it. If we don't like the food, we haven't understood that the food is being brought to us out of love and kindness. So it's a huge opportunity to observe moods about foods, to observe and to see, well, what is the problem? Is the belly full or not? Can it digest or not? Of course, sickness comes and maybe it doesn't work so well. And then we try to adjust to that. Somebody volunteered recently to bring a meal who hadn't come before on her own. And it's not so simple because we do have many restrictions. Looking back at my life and realizing I've had about 12,500 meals over the years that were given. They were just given. That's a lot of food. So kindness is a treasure. And the Buddha established our life here based on that principle that there is kindness in the world. Therefore, you can live following this way of precepts where you can grow your food, you can buy it. We were standing in the market yesterday and one person asked, they wanted to give us money. And she pulled out quite a few dollars into the bowl. No, 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 we can't take money. Really? What do you want? Do it? We just collect food. And quite a few times people ask, who's it for? And when we say it's for us, well, not always, but very often people will go and buy something and offer it. And we've never met them. They don't even know who we are or what this is. It's just, you come and you're standing there and they are generous. There's a kindness and a wish to share. You can't imagine what most people trust to live their life based on that principle, like for your food. And when I first became a nun, I didn't actually get it because I lived in a big monastery and there was food every day. I didn't have to go out and receive alms food, but people came to the monastery and brought meals every day. But when I first started to go out to collect alms food, usually I would stand in front of a bakery or a grocery store because you can't eat jewelry or watches or cloth, obviously, and people would come out and, oh, they're curious, what are you doing? Food seems to really touch a chord. But what about the food for the mind? We can eat less or little or simply and be content. But how do we do contentment with regard to other areas of our life? Like content with the company we keep, content with our own disabilities or sickness or weakness or age, young or old. I remember many years people didn't believe how old I was because I always looked young, not now, but for a long time. And one time I went to visit my dad. He was in the hospital and I was in my 40s. And the woman at the desk said, you can't go in. I said, why? She said, you have to be over 12. I said, are you kidding me? So I walked in. To be content with patched robes. You can't go and buy these. In Thailand you can. But these can be sewn, so we can sew. And then our culture is, if it has a hole or it gets old, you just get a new one. We've had guests come here who are missing a button or there's something torn, and they just get a new shirt. We're busy collecting buttons and zippers and elastic and needles to keep things going for years and years. But what about the mind? How do we dress the mind? And we can dress it. We can repair and heal. Like if you need a zipper, you get a little zipper and you sew it in. But how do we zip? How do we dress? How do we close the gaps when there is no hope, no sense of faith or trust in what is happening in this day, in the way the world is going, for example? How do we find that stability and that strength to face what seems decadent or irreparable? When whole institutions that have been so helpful in the world are just destroyed by some opinions. When people are not treated well because of their religious beliefs or because of their race, their gender, their education, or they're treated better. Some people are given privilege because they have a lot of money. But they have no morals. So the very fundamental aspect of this practice is purification. And care of the body, renunciation, care of the buildings, where we live, for all of us, is really helpful. But this body-mind is our house. And the way we dress it is not about outer clothing, but how do we cultivate internally? What qualities do we emphasize? So the purity of action and speech is not only to practice kindness outwardly, not only to practice truthfulness outwardly, but it's to also bring that inwardly. And one of the most important moments I remember when it hit me that if I didn't behave well to myself, if I got angry at my anger, if I am fearful of my fear, if I'm not able to forgive myself, then my practice goes to pieces very fast. So it was like a little light shining on the mirror. People look in the mirror to see, is the face clean? Or to make sure the hair is not all over the place. We look in the mirror to see, we shave our heads, so we don't have to worry about hairdos. But to shave the heart, that's an internal, invisible, private cleaning, purifying, working with, molding, repairing, upholding the good qualities. And it doesn't mean that we're perfect at all. It means that we have to be aware and present more and more and more to notice when things are not coming out as they should. When we're not speaking in a way that is helpful, when we're bringing harm to situations, when other people are speaking in ways that we can't deal with, or we feel frightened by, then we can't change how other people are, but we can certainly work with what is arising and ceasing here in our own heart. This is the crux of the holy life, the life that is whole, holy, and also whole with a W. W for wonderful, W for wise, W for well. It's a health. The health of the mind is really the peace, the kindness, the love that we can offer to ourselves and each other. The contentment, the awareness, compassion. Present moment attention also helps to clarify our ability to see, because we keep noticing more and more in subtle ways what is actually the origin of our suffering. And we stop blaming conditions or other people, anyone, ourselves or each other. We cut at the beginning of the blame, and we take responsibility for our own suffering. Oh, of course, I ate too much sweet, therefore I have a tummy ache. But that's according to what we put into the body. But what we put into the mind, whatever is arising in the mind, is created from within us. It may be triggered or precipitated by external events, but isn't it really how we bring that in and what we do with that? How we respond to it? And if we're aware enough and we see the origin of our suffering, it always comes down to anger or fear or selfishness, greed, desire. I want this. I want you to be nice to me. But can we be nice when the person we're with is not nice? Can we respond to each other when we have a bad mood or someone else has a bad mood? Can we forgive? Can we bring forth qualities that we would like to feed our mind by bringing up gratitude for the blessings that are there? In every situation, there is some blessing that we can notice, that we can bring forth and help to soothe and to dispel anger or fear, so that we don't practice anger, so we don't cultivate fear, so that we don't follow greed. Because the more we follow and cultivate and precipitate those kinds of feelings, the bigger they get. The monster grows. And then we can have a real temper tantrum because we didn't get the kind of food or whatever we need. And the heart does need love. The more we cultivate it, the more happy we become, the more joyful. The less fear we have, the more we can trust, the more secure and well we feel. And then life becomes just such a pleasant experience that we share with each other. But they don't teach you this so much. But really, divinity is here within us. If we're looking for the Buddha or any deity or any supreme being out there, we have to look within first. We have to look here. And then whatever we want to save us, to save this being, to save this mind, this heart, if we bring that forth within us, it will save us. And that's really the Buddha's teaching. Look for the suffering moment by moment. Whatever thoughts are arising, to examine and inspect and realize, well, that's not a happy thought. Why? Then we keep looking, inspecting, and realizing, well, there's a lot of greed. The result on a worldly level or even with the body, getting disappointed because the body isn't young or it's not well. And then the mind state is infected by that. So we have within us the means to cure not the sickness of the body, perhaps, but even if we're dying, there's a way to be with those conditions where we don't add to the suffering of the body because the heart is clear. We can bring up that quality of forgiveness, of love, of compassion, and of gratitude. We give thanks a lot in this life. We give thanks when we eat, when people come to feed us, when we come to sit. The amount of gratitude, if we didn't have gratitude, it would be very difficult to eat the food, because what people bring us every day is a food of kindness that feeds our ability to save this heart from falling into despair. Because we are able to practice knowing in this moment what we truly are, and leaving behind the causes and conditions that create suffering. So we're working towards waking up moment by moment with gratitude for whatever comes, whether it's lovely or not. We make it lovely. Make it good, because it's all food for awakening, every bit of it.